You back?
Hi there.
Hi there.
Aloha.
Aloha. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
All right. Let me just make sure the tape recorder is picking us up.
But it's not swine flu.
It's not. Boy, I thought of you a lot as it started to hit.
We had our first case in a dorm end of last week, so I've been very busy out there.
Oh, I'll bet you have. And you're the chancellor and the expert, right? So.
So I do a lot of TV right now.
Well, we appreciate it, Ginger. Let me just say for the tape, this is the second interview with Virginia S. Hinshaw, formerly dean of the graduate school at UW-Madison. The interviewers are Charles Reed and Marita Weiss. This is May 11th, 2009. And we have Chancellor Hinshaw on the line from the University of Hawaii. So, with that said, thanks again, Ginger, for being with us. We appreciate it. And I think that in our last conversation, the first interview, I think we really got up to the point at which you became dean of the graduate school. Is that your recollection?
Right.
Okay. So, unless there's something you have recalled that you'd like to go back and pick up, why don't we pick it up from there?
That's fine with me.
Okay. So, let's see. You became, now I don't have your vita sitting in front of me. I'm sorry. But you became dean of the graduate school in 2005. I'm sorry, in 1995. When I became dean of the School of Education.
Right.
All right. Well, would you like to start with
first impressions
and how you saw your charge there at the graduate school at that point?
Well, I found that an exciting experience in so many ways. UW-Madison's impressive in that regard to begin with, but trying to figure out ways to enhance that, I found particularly invigorating. I really enjoyed that phase of my career. The, graduate students are the future of research, so I think having them tied together into the research, where you serve as vice chancellor for research and dean of the graduate school,
Yeah.
I think that's a very important combination, and it's one I favor. Because I think those two need to be tied together, otherwise sometimes graduate schools can end up being the poor sister.
Yeah, we've kind of seen that some other places.
Right, so I felt that was great. I came in working with a great team of folks, one you're sitting next to.
Yeah.
It was one that was really engaging, too, because you had to deal with the entire campus, and having been in the provost's office for a while was very helpful in dealing with cross-campus issues, say, for example, the biology programs. But this one truly was, I thought, a wonderful opportunity. I learned a lot. We had some pretty significant challenges right off, particularly revolving around the Primate Center.
You want to talk about that one a little bit?
What?
Would you like to talk about that one a bit?
Well, in the Primate Center, we had some major personnel issues that developed into a fairly large problem. In addition to the handling of primates for the campus, when the zoo wanted to reduce their colony and get rid of a lot of the primates, what to be done with those. So it kind of all circulated around the personnel, the financial issues. We ended up in court on the personnel issues. We did succeed in making our case there, but it was a very public, all-encompassing type of problem, and I was pleased with how we worked through it. It took everybody, including folks like Maury, of course, in communication. We learned a lot during that process, and I think we got better because of it, but it did take some hard decisions and sticking to it.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
For for the record, for people who might be listening to this in the future, we might note that the facility at the Vilas Park Zoo was one in which some primates were on display. They were really looked like part of the zoo. It was open for the public to observe, but at the same time, it was a place where researchers could observe the social interactions of this colony of primates, right?
And for the record too, I did dismiss the some of the people involved in the personnel issues, and that's what led to some of the additional court appearances.
Yeah. Tough way to start.
It was. I had two tough things. That was the big one because I saw that. Mari knows it was very shortly after I joined because some of the information we were getting just did not make sense, so I challenged the director and said, I don't understand and I don't believe, and you have to be honest with me. And so that led us into uncovering some problems that needed to be addressed, and so we went about addressing them, which is how you get better. And the second one is I was diagnosed with breast cancer in March of 2006, and so I was very open
96.
About that.
96.
Oh, 96, yeah. I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I was open about it, and I found that to be very positive, too. I think I only missed a day and a half during that time dealing with it, but I learned a lot about people who were also facing problems. I could be an advocate for them as well as for the research arena in that area, and so that was great. We also, during my time there, we started the K through Infinity, which was an unusual program for the grad school, but I know now has magnified and started with Terry Millar's ideas, you know, rolled over into a major grant opportunity for the institution. We started Ice Cube, which was also regarding neutrinos, which again rolled into a major, major support for the institution. Synchrotron Radiation Center. We just had a lot. The Biotechnology Center evolved enormously during that time, including new plans for buildings. There was a lot of exciting activity going on. One that I worked on as well was the Wisconsin Distinguished Graduate Fellowship,
right,
which was a matching program to support graduate students, and had a lot of work, spent over a year and a half on that one to get set it up so that WRF would be the match and we'd be able to generate and interest donors and support, which we ended up with 125 when I left. Now, then WRF got a little worried about how successful it was, apparently.
That's right. It was a little too successful.
People were concerned that it would only be in the sciences, so that proved quite not to be the case. We had them in music and all kinds of humanities areas because, but I had to overcome the concern that people said, well, individuals don't give to graduate programs, but they do. And particularly for a place like UW-Madison that has, you know, been a hallmark of what they've been able to do so well. So I was very pleased with that because those keep going. And what you look back on is, you know, what things went on and kept going, such as some of the things I mentioned and evolved into bigger, better activities. We took in the Wisconsin Idea Seminar, which again was an unusual match for us, because we thought it was really important to faculty and the communities in Wisconsin. The Y Files, their grant was running out, and that was likely not to keep going, and so we took that into the grad school. And so we were trying to strengthen some of the effective programs on campus, and I think you can see that those particular ones remain effective and actually have grown in recognition.
Yeah, those are all successful programs. Again, just to fill in a little bit for somebody who might be listening without some of the context that we in the conversation are aware of, the Wisconsin Distinguished Graduate Fellowships were intended to be, and indeed were, premier fellowships. They were they paid more than most other fellowships, if not any other fellowships. They were really meant to recognize truly outstanding graduate students in the departments that had been able to get the gift that would then evoke the matching funds. Those were really very special opportunities for graduate students.
Right. You feel sense of accomplishment and joy in the fact that those will keep on going because they're endowments.
One thing I remember, Ginger, is that we had some celebrations. I remember some at the Edgewater Hotel where we brought together donors and winners of the Wisconsin Distinguished Graduate Fellowships, and you spoke. Some of us school and college deans were there to celebrate it. These were fellowships that really brought some glory to the graduate students and their departments.
I think there was a reinforcement at every level with that type of program because the deans had worked hard as well, and they had to generate the support. And it's important to do effective stewardship. So I actually required that all the students write to the donors, tell them what they were doing, why this was important support for them, and also be sure that the deans were well aware and the departments were well aware of who those donors were and what they were doing to support the university and their programs.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of good feeling on the part of the donors and, of course, certainly on the part of the graduate students. One thing we might say, again, kind of filling in a little bit, the K through infinity program, that stood for kindergarten through infinity, meaning it was really aimed at involving graduate students in. Now, correct me if I go wrong here, Ginger, but it was aimed at involving graduate students in enhancing science and math education at all levels, I mean, pre-college and college, and it was funded by the National Science Foundation.
Correct. We invested in it initially because we didn't have such a program initially, but then we got support. The one difference, we took a different route. In the fact that it was originally proposed to put graduate students in a classroom in K through 12, and we took a different route, which was labor-intensive but much more effective in that we respected the teacher in the classroom as the master teacher, and that we were, our role as faculty and graduate students primarily was to develop tools that would help them in the classroom, so it was a team effort. And I think that's why it was effective, because it was based on respect of the teachers themselves, not just us coming in and say we've got the best ideas, because we don't. Putting graduate students in the classroom, if they're not prepared, it's not doing them a favor. It just creates more work. So we took a different route, and it worked.
Yeah. There was some good cooperation with the School of Education on that, and we appreciated it.
Mm-hmm. They're the experts, and you want to reinforce that at every occasion.
We should probably mention that Associate Dean Terry Millar was one of the leaders in that. Was that true from the beginning, Ginger?
Yes, it was. Yes. Terry, as Murray knows, he had some wonderful ideas. Now, we had to sort through a few of them.
Yes.
Like all of us, we have some really good ones, and we have some that should stay on the table. This one was intriguing, and it was a risk-taking to a certain extent because it's not normally associated with the graduate school.
Yeah.
But it really, to me, was how we would improve STEM, and I was really grateful to Terry for his leadership in that because it took a lot of work.
And now, the involvement of the graduate school in helping graduate students to work with pre-college education as well as enhancing college and university education and the preparation of graduate students for non-traditional careers of various sorts has all kind of been wrapped together now into I forgot what it's called, but an office that really is devoted to giving graduate students this array of opportunities, in addition to the traditional careers in college and university teaching and research.
Yeah, I had with my own graduate students, a number went into academic units, universities like our own, mm-hmm. but a number went into different types of careers, whether it was in industry or different types of universities. There are lots of options out there for people, and it's important for them to recognize that, because there are a limited number of opportunities within universities, and with budget crisis, they become less. So making sure that they see the, you know, just the whole vision of opportunities out there. We need educated people, and even more educated people in different arenas, including in government and things like that, so they can give good policy decisions.
In that connection, Ginger, would it be fair to say, or am I off on my timing here, would it be fair to say that while you were dean, increasingly departments came to recognize that there weren't likely to be, in many areas, not all, but in many areas, there weren't likely to be jobs in traditional college and university positions for the number of graduate students that they really wanted to prepare and the number of graduate students who wanted to get a degree, the sort of realization that we had to start thinking of other careers as worthwhile outcomes.
And building respect for those careers. One of the great opportunities in the position there is working with WARF, and you know, highlighting the patent and licensing income. And I made a change there where the first majority of the first $100,000 generated went back to stimulate the researchers' or scholars' activities so that they would keep generating. And that, to me, was an important change, because it said, you know, keep on putting ideas out there, because those new opportunities actually provided the career opportunities for our students. And they didn't all have to be in universities. I think we did focus on that and the teaching more and the undergraduate. I served as PI of the McNair program, which is an undergraduate program for minorities, but and the summer opportunity program. We enhanced that enormously to be sure we were also bringing in diverse populations. And I think clearly UW-Madison has made strides forward on that.
Yeah. Would you like to say a little bit more, Ginger, since you've introduced it, would you like to say anything more about this very crucial relationship between the graduate school and WARF?
Yeah, it is. It's very special, and UW-Madison is very blessed to have WARF, because it's a separate entity, whereas most places it's incorporated within the university. So the WARF adds a dimension of flexibility and to me provides that margin of excellence with the resources that they have in investing in facilities and people and programs. That was a true blessing. And UW-Madison has a number of foundations that have been very generous with the university, but WARF certainly is a hallmark as far as where I think they've really made strides forward because of that activity.
Mm-hmm. Mari?
Anything to talk about any of the grad organizations, the Council of Grad Schools, you were the Association of Grad Schools you were active in.
Right. I really enjoyed that. In fact, I served as officer in most of these organizations. The CIC itself was very important, interacting with our colleagues in the Big Ten. That we did a lot of things together in the research arena and in bringing new technologies. I thought our grad school was really innovative in when we were trying to do the People Soft, which I nicknamed People Hard, is that we had bright people that figured out, Jane and a whole bunch of folks, figured out how we could help the campus keep functioning, and we became the interface with People Soft so that they didn't get shut down when things went awry. And some of that came out of discussions with our Big Ten colleagues. A number of them used some of our innovations. We shared a lot in the Big Ten. Our closest ones were probably Minnesota, Purdue, and Penn State. But we really did interact, and I also enjoyed very much the AAU interaction. At that point, it was interesting. They had a grad dean's group, but they didn't have a research officer's group. And that, to me, seemed very peculiar. So I pushed them to form that, which they did, because I said, you know, this is a group of research universities, yet that one group doesn't get together. Mm-hmm. And so they did that, and I think that's helpful. But I found the colleagues within those organizations very helpful. I also helped teach in some of the programs. I took the CIC leadership program as well as the UW-Madison one, and I think those were very helpful in my development.
Mm-hmm. When you say the University of the UW-Madison one, are you referring to the Kauffman Seminar?
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. A lot of people did the Kauffman Seminar and the CIC leadership program together. Was that true for you?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm. I took them, and then I later became a teacher.
Yeah, right.
I think preparing people for leadership positions and increasing their awareness, and also their awareness that other institutions have issues as well, it's not solely our own, was very helpful. And I learned a lot, and I was very grateful for that opportunity.
Again, for somebody who might be listening to this without some of the acronyms, we might explain that there were at that time two organizations of graduate deans, the AGS, which was the Association of Graduate Schools, I guess, the AAU deans, the deans of graduate schools at the 60 or so major leading research universities, self-promoted. And the other was the Council of Graduate Schools, which was a much larger organization, basically graduate deans from any place that had a graduate school that wanted to be part of the organization, if I recall. And how did you feel about that one, Ginger, the CGS?
Well, I respect what they were doing, but it was so broad that it made it somewhat more difficult for us to bring in the issues that we might be dealing with as large public research universities. Mm-hmm. So actually, more of my interactions where we had actually programs and everything that came out of it involved the CI, the Big Ten, and the AGS from the Association of American Universities. Mm-hmm. I went to those and participated so I could understand some of the issues on people's agendas. But it was very large, and that was a little difficult to be as effective that way.
You also were a major player when we moved research and sponsored programs from the Vice Chancellor for Finance to the Dean of the Graduate School, and kind of, you really sort of created the use of the title as Vice Chancellor for Research. Some of that was difficult, as I recall. I don't know, do you have any specifics where we were negotiating hard, or John Torfey was, who was then Vice Chancellor, was he dragging his feet?
Well, the reason, you know, leaders are supposed to do the hard things. So. And so I do believe in problem solving, and you identify a problem and then you try to address it. And that was the case with research administration, and because it had gotten separate. In the grad school, we were making policies, but then the implementers were totally separate from us. And I went down and visited with all the folks and listened to what their jobs were. And I think one of the most interesting ones that I heard from is this woman who used to call up and harass investigators if they were $10 over their budget for a research grant.
Right.
And I said, well, that must not be very satisfying. And she says, oh, but I keep on them. And I said, well, you know that doesn't seem quite right to me. So we came back and we changed the policy, but, you know, we have to have them implement. So it's having that separation is a bad thing. We changed it. If there's a certain level of overruns, then the deans are responsible for covering it. And if they become habitual, then you know, there are other ways you can get at them, but you don't spend all your time calling up individual investigators and harassing them, because it's not very productive and it's not very satisfying for the people doing it.
Yeah.
That was one example when I was listening as to why this might be a good thing. I don't think Torvey was dragging as much. He really saw the issue. It was just a change, and so we had to go through this process to make sure that it made sense and we could manage it. Mm-hmm. It had been separate for a good while, so part of our goal was to integrate them more into what the research arena was. Like, actually have them, you know, meet investigators and learn about some of the research projects so they could appreciate their important role, not just as police. Mm-hmm. They were facilitators, not police. And so that was a culture change. But I thought it was very much needed because it connected the two functions in the best way. Mm-hmm. So we could serve the campus research mission.
As I recall, you also started the new faculty orientation that we came up with.
Right.
To kind of walk them through some of the processes, help them get their first grants out the door.
Right. What I noticed on orientations is, you know, people often design them as if people like drinking out of a fire hose. And so it's hard to absorb a lot of information. So we carefully laid out what they could absorb at that point, mm-hmm. Good people in there to deliver, and also brown bags to help them follow up on that. But, you know, show them where to get help, because focus on what they need to think about from the very beginning with regard to tenure and documenting, how they can get help in different arenas, where it's reasonable for them to absorb that, but then they can absorb more as they learn more, but get them off to a good, solid start without overloading them with things that they aren't going to remember. So I thought that was very productive. We also started having required programs for leaders on campus about issues, and I thought that was very helpful, whether it be tenure or organizational structures, specific program for centers, because they're different in many ways and often can have different problems and challenges. So we focused a lot more on bringing people together and letting them learn, particularly from their peer groups. I think one thing that I did as well is we had a problem with the revolving door with women and minorities, and that was part of my basis for this educational process. If we make it better for them, we'll make it better for everybody. But I did eventually call in one department and told them that they were a revolving door. People would come in, particularly women and minorities, and then they'd leave. And so that was a huge cost economically and morally to the campus. So therefore, I would no longer invest in their startups. Okay?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a big stick.
Really, do you use the hammer? I prefer the carrots, and those work in most cases. But on occasion, you have to use that. But I ask them, if you come up with a program or a plan that will improve your situation, then I'll reconsider. Well, they came up with a wonderful plan. They became the advocates and the spokespeople on campus. That's what you're after, is getting the peer groups to come up with ideas, and then they take ownership of it, and they become the voice. It's not administrators telling them. It's the peer group telling them that, you know, this is really good. It's making us better. We recognize that this is important for us to do. And I think that was what was behind a lot of this education, is how do we improve the experience for faculty, staff, and students on the campus, so that we create happy alumni, happy members, and we can get better.
Mari alluded to the fact that you used the title Vice Chancellor for Research, which had been actually the role of the graduate dean, but for the most part, the title hadn't been used much. And you want to say a little bit about the
evolution,
the point of that, and the evolution there? It certainly is used today, but I think you were the one that initiated it.
Well, again, it was trying to be sure that people understood the connection. The graduate students are the future of research, and then there's the research endeavor that's ongoing that allows them to become that future. So I was trying to emphasize that they are tied together, mm-hmm. not separate entities. And that, to me, would strengthen the experience for the graduate students, and we spent a lot of time on that. How could we do a better job? I was very blessed to work with the council of the graduate school. We had a lot of really active people. We totally redid program review. That was really impressive, and we consolidated a lot of programs. I remember one in particular with pharmacy, where we had six different degrees, and those became consolidated to make a much stronger program. We started a program where groups would recruit together, and I would help support their activities if they recruited together so that students would see a critical mass. But one of the really great outcomes of it is we saw the faculty enjoying getting together and new opportunities coming out of that interaction. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was figuring out better ways to help people partner and interact, and as you mentioned, also celebrate our successes. I think we need to celebrate the successes. And the department that came forward with a great plan, I celebrated them in many different ways. Mm-hmm. We celebrate the folks that are willing to step forward and make us better.
You spoke of the council, Ginger. Was that the official name? Was that the Faculty Executive Committee of the Graduate School? I'm trying to think just which group.
I think we call them the Graduate Faculty Council.
The Graduate Faculty Council.
But I'm not. I'd have to double check on the title. I just call them the Grad Council.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thinking back for just a moment here to the. To the beginning of your term as graduate, your service as graduate dean. Now, you and I have joked a couple of times about the fact that I left you a card on the desk. It was about the size of a 3x5 card, as I remember, with what I thought were the 5 or 10 biggest bubbling issues at the time. And you probably alluded to some of those in the course of the conversation so far. I don't know. I don't remember what they were. Do you?
Well, they were related to many of the issues we've discussed about the coordination, the enhancement of different areas, some of the challenges with regard to diversity, investments, WARF's relationship. Yeah. I found it very helpful, and I kept it. I believe in calling on people that have been in positions and using the knowledge they've gained, because you don't have to reinvent it.
Yeah.
People are out there. So I found it helpful. You also left something on my computer, which was, if this person calls, call the police.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Remember that, because this was an individual who routinely threatened to shoot us.
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember that one vividly.
Some of those.
What, did you leave a little 3x5 card on the desk when you left?
I did it with Martin when I was talking to him about the issues that I saw that we could improve, and the things we wanted to keep sacred. I think all of us talk about change a lot, and I certainly believe we should be change agents, and I believe in change. However, I also think universities need to think about what is very special about them that you want to keep. For example, the Wisconsin idea. Mm-hmm. Is a very precious aspect, the public service, the service learning. Those, how do we serve, and the winnowing aspects of what we do, our responsibilities to the state and beyond. There are lots of precious things about UW-Madison that you want to be sure you maintain.
One of those, I think, Ginger, from my perspective, and I believe that you felt this way too, you can say for your part, was the sort of distributed role, the role of a variety of people, including faculty committees, in distributing the WARF gift, the Fellowships Committee, the Graduate School Research Committee. It's often been said that if other universities had a gift as substantial as that of WARF to the annual gift of WARF to the UW, In some other universities, the patent and licensing income goes as a sort of a slush fund to one official, often the president or chancellor, whereas we have this tradition of a very broad distribution of responsibilities, a big role for the graduate school and for its committees. And I always considered that a major one, and I have the impression that you do too.
Well, yeah, I think that activity was invaluable. For several reasons. First of all, engaging the community as a whole in the decision-making and respecting that. But also the fact that, you know, certain entities, State of Humanities, for example, will have access to limited pools, and we wanted to encourage everybody to be actively pursuing those pools, even though they were smaller than in some of the sciences, for example. And this was one mechanism by which we could do it. We could support them and allow them to explore their scholarship and be eligible for monies within that pool. So to me, the faculty involvement, the staff involvement was just enormously positive, and I think it is the model about how to do it.
Now, you've had the opportunity to be a leader and the leader at University of California, Davis, and now at the University of Hawaii. Would you like to reflect on what the graduate school here looks like and your experience as dean of the graduate school looks like, having with the advantage of having been in leadership positions at these other places?
I think serving in the capacity I did at UW-Madison, the greatest experiences for me in my career, and also helped me look across campus, so I thought it was wonderful in that regard. It increased my knowledge and appreciation for everything. And when you come in as a scientist, everybody thinks you're going to be hard on the other disciplines. Actually, you have a tendency to be harder on the sciences because you understand those. So it was, and actually how humanities folks versus science folks might approach issues. Some groups, the context of what you're talking about is the most important part. The other groups want to get to the vote really quickly. So that is really important to understand those differences amongst our different disciplines. I think UW-Madison has the best model in regard to tying research and graduate education together, and very fortunate in the support that it has at its hand, which many places do not have, and the mechanism by which we distributed it. I found it outstanding in that regard, and I've been very grateful for that experience because I think it's helped me in every position I've held since then as well.
And that linkage of the graduate school and research administration, research policy, we are now in the minority in the CIC, in the Big Ten, essentially. And as I understand it, it's now just UW-Madison and Penn State that have that model. But I also gather that goes back and forth at some places.
Yeah, it's changed a lot, and you know, there's no sacred way. People split, put together, whatever. I personally and professionally favor having them together, because at least dealing with the Big Ten or any of the other entities, I found that those tended to attract strong leaders. They had the wherewithal financially to make changes in graduate education that, when it's separate, might not be as readily apparent, or unless the leader of the institution does it. I've been at one, UC Davis, they were separate. So we tried to tie them together in every way, because I still think that's the best arrangement. Some people worry that there's too much on the portfolio. I was fortunate in having associate deans that were highly accomplished and able to do great jobs, and we met regularly. We knew what we were doing. We discussed our strategies and our priorities. So it worked for UW-Madison because of the infrastructure also that they'd built in the graduate school. Mm-hmm. And the talented folks.
You want to say a little bit about that internal networking and within the graduate school and how it worked? You mentioned regular meetings. There was also a lot of informal sharing of ideas, problems, questions, right?
Oh, yeah. We met regularly. We went in and out of each other's offices all the time. We met in small groups, large groups. We had what I call advances. Where you go out and discuss that we planned together. And sometimes it's always intimidating for folks that might have different positions, but I've always tried to overcome that by, I'm not hierarchical. I just have a slightly different job from other folks, but I need for them to do their job. And I think we, for example, with Debbie Gibson, we wanted to redo the orientation for grad students. And we turned it into a wonderful event, which gave them good education, good information. We hosted dances, come dance with the deans. We did a lot of rather innovative community building, which I think helped the grad school as well. And it also put people in positions of having the authority and responsibility to make it happen. And most of the times they did. And when they didn't, you just get together and see how you do it better next time.
Mm-hmm. Again, for the record, Debbie Gibson was the assistant dean for admissions.
Yeah.
One thing I'd mention, too, Madison has a big plus with like the profiles and data.
Yes.
That they use. They have much very good data systems for data-driven decision-making, so people are more informed. And that's really helpful whether you're recruiting grad students or whether you're investing in certain research initiatives. And we found that to be very, very helpful. I certainly did, and I've tried to institute some of that everywhere I've been.
Now, one transition that took place while you were dean was from David Ward as chancellor to John Wiley as chancellor in 2001. You want to comment at all about how that may have affected the graduate school and what differences you saw from your perspective?
David, I have enormous respect for David. I've worked with him on many occasions and since then, by the way. Is a true academic, understood how the institution worked. He stood with me on a number of issues, which was extremely supportive and helpful in moving forward. Then John had been the dean of the graduate school, so he had a much more intimate knowledge of the grad school than David did. And some of the challenges that could come up there is that you want to be sure that they do their job and you do yours, not overlap. So we'd have discussions about that. But he was a good source of information about what had worked and what hadn't within the graduate school. Mm-hmm. But he continued a strong interest in it because he's a research lover. And he's a very talented individual. He made a lot of good changes in the grad school. And so I did work with him a good bit on a number of issues. Mm-hmm. He understood the research arena quite well.
Yeah, he always said that the best job he ever had was as dean of the graduate school, and I think he said that sincerely, but it meant that he had a pretty lively interest in the graduate school continuing.
Yeah, so my goal was to keep him informed, but keep the activities and decision-making with the graduate school, because it is true. To me, it is the best job at UW-Madison. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting. You work with the whole campus. You work with undergraduates, graduate, and professionals, because we also had undergraduate research programs and engaged with them a lot, because you don't get graduate students if you don't work with the undergraduates. Mm-hmm. We covered the whole gamut, including back into the high school. Mm-hmm. So it was an exciting, and we also had resources to invest. So I did find it probably one of the most enjoyable jobs that I've had as well.
Mm-hmm. Are we ready to move on? Do you want to say a little bit about the time at which you felt that it was time for you to look at other positions, and when you finally accepted the position of provost at UC Davis? Do you want to? I don't want to cut short our discussion of the graduate school, but are we ready to move on to that phase?
Yeah, I just say one thing that. UW-Madison should really feel proud of what's been accomplished, I think, through the graduate school. I think it's a very good model for ways to move forward in a lot of positive directions, and I think that's why it is viewed as the best job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So moving on, the last two jobs, I told them no when they asked, because I was enjoying very much what I was doing, but when I looked at them, I became intrigued with the fact that my background, experiences, and passions might well be a good match for what they needed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've always been kind of a risk taker. My husband teases me that if I start becoming comfortable in something, I start looking around for some other challenge, and there's the truth in that. But I went to Davis because I thought it was a good match for what they needed at that time,
mm-hmm.
and I had the flexibility to do what I wanted to at that point, so I thought that that would be a good endeavor, and I knew the grad school would be in good hands. I do follow it. I enjoy watching what has come out that we started together. I celebrate the people that have made it happen. So you look back at those and feel good, and you learn from what you didn't do so well.
What were the needs at UC Davis that you felt were particularly fitting for your background and your skills?
Well, they needed to, they were doing a lot of activities extremely well, but not many people knew it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I told them they suffered from Midwestern humility, but I didn't. You know, at UW-Madison, people may not appreciate this, but they have a tremendous news service and communication. And also through the Alumni Association and through the foundation. They have the opportunity in many cases to get the word out to people. And to me, that was critical in UW-Madison's success. And so when I got to Davis, that was a big issue. I said, you're adding a tremendous value and highly accomplished, but people aren't learning about it. So we focus a lot on advocacy, communication. Also, their research arena needed certain changes in order to function better in an economic manner, but also to invest in fewer things and make them stronger, not do a lot of things poorly. So there were a lot of activities there that my personality, since I like people and like to communicate, a lot of it centered around being able to communicate and provide a voice for the campus to enhance their value in the community and beyond.
I find it interesting, Ginger, that what you just said about UC Davis being sort of hiding its light under a bushel is what Donna Shalala said about UW-Madison when she came here in 1988. Was it?
Yes. 88? Yeah, she said
She said you got way too much Midwestern humility. You need to get out there with the great things that are going on.
And I think she was 100% right. And Donna was one of my mentors. And I really, even though she was chancellor when I was serving in other roles, I was fortunate to have her as a mentor. And she had, she did have that. And she was decisive, and which I think people appreciate. Move forward. Some things worked, some things didn't, but we were moving. Mm-hmm. People had a sense of that and excitement about that.
Anything else about your service as dean of the graduate school that you want to be sure is on record for this purpose?
I think I've covered most of it. I felt that we accomplished a lot by working together and having talented people and making sure that they could excel. Part of my job is to make sure that everybody can, magnify their impact. And I think that's a team approach, and I think that was quite clear in the graduate school, and it helped us with our centers, drawing them closer in, making sure they were doing business as they should. We did eliminate one center during that time, and it was painful.
Yeah.
And we merged the Enzyme Institute back into biochemistry. And in some ways, I saw where I could have done that a little differently and not caused quite so much stress for the folks, but it was something that needed to be done. And I think people do appreciate decision-making and moving forward. I think UW-Madison does it extremely well.
It may have been particularly hard for you as a bioscientist, the Enzyme Institute issue. I mean, you could probably feel their pain.
Yeah, I did. And I also felt the need to ensure that the junior faculty had every opportunity to succeed. And sometimes centers come up and they do wonderful things, and then over time they don't fit the current mode. It wasn't anything negative about any of the folks involved. It was just structurally it wasn't contributing in the way that would strengthen UW-Madison in the best way possible.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Now, this is a good time to reflect on anything else that you might have recollected about your service here at UW-Madison. It might be about teaching, it might be about research, it might be about your administrative work, it might be about honors and recognitions, anything else that we might overlook here.
I love teaching. That's one of the reasons I went back into a university, because I like working with students and teaching. And so I maintained teaching. I couldn't run programs like I did before, but I did teach. One of my challenges was I was still running a lab when I started working part-time in John's office when he was provost. I did decide when I assumed the role as Vice Chancellor for Research Dean of the Graduate School that I would stop that, because I felt my responsibility was work on behalf of other folks. So I turned it over to my former postdoc, Chris Olson, and the fellow that replaced me at St. Jude's replaced me at UW-Madison, Kyle Wilka. I turned the program over to them, and it's going great guns today. And I get a lot of personal satisfaction out of that as well. And another postdoc is now on the faculty there at UW-Madison. So I enjoy seeing my academic children do well and the programs that I had an influence on succeed mm-hmm. under their leadership. I did walk away. I did not keep hold of it.
mm-hmm. And that's hard to do, isn't it?
That is. I think, but, you know, again, it's the concept that I've held very near and dear is that trying to do a few things well rather than a lot of things poorly. And when you go into an administrative role, you must be ready to serve others. It's not to build your own. It's to serve others and help them be successful. And I think the team we had in the graduate school and in many areas across the campus took that approach when we did strategic planning versus when we did research investments or graduate student decision making. I think that was on our mind. How could we serve the institution and be sure the future mm-hmm. would be stronger? And a lot of those things wouldn't happen immediately, by the way. You have to have a long-term view. Mm-hmm. There's a problem with the Polaroid mentality today that people expect it tomorrow.
Yeah, if not sooner.
Research is definitely a long-term operation. That's why there's the RE in research. It's over and over, and then making sure people know about it. There was one program I started there that I never got to see come to fruition, and that was having every graduate student do a lay summary of their work so we could share it with the politicians and with their community, their relatives. And that was one that I thought was important, and it's now kind of become requirement in a lot of grants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to be successful as a researcher, you better be able to convince a broad group of folks that what you're doing is value-added.
Yes, and it's interesting how a lot of people, even in the humanities, where people are supposed to be good at explaining what they do, a lot of people don't seem to appreciate that.
Yeah, one of the funny instances was with Fanny Lemoyne. She took me to, because I wanted to be actively engaged, and I've always been out and about a lot to listen and see what people are doing. She took me to an event in the humanities, and a fella had a paper of 10 pages, single-spaced, and they'd given it to us ahead of time, and he read it to us.
Oh no.
I was sitting there saying, but I thought we were going to discuss it. I've already read it. And Fanny educated me about, well, the beauty of the delivery is important, which as a scientist, that was certainly foreign to me because, you know, you read and then you went in and discussed and moved ahead. So I had to learn some of those aspects, which I also think at times the humanities tended to be the more isolated group because they didn't have a team.
Yeah.
That's true.
You had to work with in order to move ahead. And they talked to each other more than others. And I saw them as key in this, you know, in issues occurring in science, like whether it's stem cells or ethical issues, all kinds of aspects that I thought would be, their insights were invaluable, but not if they talked to each other instead of the scientists. So my goal was on a number of occasions to pull those two together so that they would be working on joint issues because the scientists had the money mm-hmm. and the humanities had valuable knowledge and information that we needed to benefit from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a funny example because I kept saying, why is he reading to us?
Yeah, indeed.
Well, some of the whole issues of research ethics and conflict of interest now, I think, has brought a fair number of the social science and humanist thinking back into a lot of those conversations.
Well, truly, one of the most magnificent events while I was there was the discovery of the human embryonic stem cells by Jamie.
Right.
And he was not a faculty member at that point, which I worked hard on accomplishing. And I became the spokesperson for stem cells for the university. And I teamed with Alta Charo and Jamie, who would handle the scientific parts. Alta did the ethics. So we had a lot of interaction with radio, press, national, worked with the news service on putting up information. We made a special page for legislators. We worked with Tommy Thompson on giving him his own course in genetics.
Yeah.
It was a hard stand. He was, you know, supportive of that endeavor.
Yeah.
It was an easy stand. So he actually worked well with us on those types of issues, and I was grateful for that. But we also put time into educating people so that they would know what the issues were. And I had lots of good teammates there to help make that happen. But that was, to me, one of the hallmarks that happened during our time there as well.
Oh, that was huge in every way.
Right.
Yeah.
Very exciting, very productive. And I think we all learned a lot about people's perspectives and how we had to respect them, but also keep promoting the impact of this tremendous discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I enjoyed that very much. It was stressful. I think the graduate school, I had many late nights with news people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very grateful for that because we had a lot of issues that we had to respond fairly quickly to, and particularly around stem cells, the primate issues. Those were some of the major ones that we had to be sure we got the information out quickly and accurately.
Mm-hmm. You've alluded a couple of times, Ginger, to the team that you had in the graduate school, the team that you inherited and refined and created and so on. You've mentioned Marita Weiss, who's here as part of the interview. You have alluded to Martin Cadwallader, who was Associate Dean for the Social Studies. You've
Terry.
Mentioned Fannie Lemoine.
Terry.
And Terry Millar. Anybody else you whose role you want to mention?
Oh, Joanne
Nagy.
Oh, yeah.
She was our graduate, in charge of our graduate studies, and she was very innovative and creative in some of the programs we put into place, trying to be sure we were serving the students. One of the things I had to work on early on was a professor situation where their behavior was inappropriate towards students, and we took action. That was one where I actually ended up saying they couldn't have the privilege of working with graduate students because of these problems, and wasn't sure that I had the authority all along to do it, but I did it anyhow. So Joanne was very innovative, and I really benefited from her input, and that was the initial team when I got, and it got stronger as time went on. I felt we had great folks working with Marita. And Marita herself, to me, was a national leader as well as a campus leader. I knew all about Marita before I went into the grad school. I'm afraid of her, too.
Whoops.
Wonderfully talented, committed to the institution, trying to get better. And that was just a delight to work with folks that had that approach and also had some of the capacity to make things happen with the resources we had.
Yeah. Again, filling in for somebody who might be listening to this at some indeterminate time in the future, Joanne Nagy, whom Ginger referred to as Associate Dean for Students for the Student Affairs, subsequently became Joanne Berg, and she is now, as of the date of this interview, she's now the Registrar of the University.
And Associate Vice Chancellor.
Right. And
Associate Vice Chancellor.
Associate Vice Chancellor, right.
One of the beauties of being in the grad school is you work with the whole campus.
Yeah.
So I got to see lots of talented folks out there and benefit from their activities. One of the interesting ones was, when the people took over David's office, David Ward's office.
Yeah.
Mm.
And somehow I Phil Certain and I ended up being the observers. Did I tell y'all about this?
No.
Okay. Well, and this is where I got to work with Sue Reisling, who is another talented chief of police. They decided that after 3 days they were starting to destroy equipment, and a lot of folks had been working with them to get them out of there, but they didn't want to come out. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, we ended up walking up Bascom Hill to remove them, and we had county, city, and campus police all working together in a coordinated way, and I had my own tear gas mask and my orange vest, and Phil and I looked at each other and said, "Do you remember this being in your job description?" It was very impressive with how they handled the situation. It was very professional, very calm, very effective. And so I got to learn about all different aspects from whether you're talking about the police or undergraduates or, issues that come up on the campus. And we had many meetings over in David's house to talk about different perspectives about what we needed to do, but very much of a team approach. But the graduate school and the research office, you're engaged in just about every community. Mm-hmm. And so you do learn a lot as well as get to work with lots of fine folks. And if you find not so fine folks, you work on changing that.
It's one of the very few positions that are both intensively academic and campus-wide.
Right. That was very helpful to me when I went to Davis, because the provost there was provost and executive vice chancellor. So you did the academic and the financial together. It came together in my office, mm-hmm. which was very similar to the situation at UW-Madison in that position, because it was cross-campus and involved the whole campus. But you talked about your academic goals as well as your financial wherewithal. Mm-hmm. So that has been, that experience has, as I said, has proven very helpful in subsequent positions, and I've benefited from that.
Yeah. We want to respect your schedule, Ginger. We were told we had an hour, and I don't want to overstay our welcome. But is there anything else you'd like to include in the interview?
Well, I think I appreciate you doing this, because I think it's important to learn from the history, because the history makes possible what we do now and into the future. I think UW-Madison is a very impressive place. My sons and daughters-in-law have 4-6 degrees from there.
Wow.
We have a tie, and I still interact with people from Wisconsin, good Badgers. Yeah. Look forward to having y'all here for the football game.
All right. Yeah.
So I think there's so many ties with large public research universities. There are not that many of us. I think it's really important to keep us tied together and learning from each other and keeping that focus as to the value of what they add. But I have no doubts that UW-Madison makes unbelievably positive contributions in many, many ways, and I'm very grateful for the time that I was there.
Well, that's a very good note on which to end. What we'll do now, there's a permission form here, which Mari and I will sign as interviewers, and they'll mail it to you, Ginger. It gives the university the archives, the university archives, the permission to use these recordings, this interview. And you can choose what conditions you wish to have on when or how the material may eventually be made available. It can be released immediately or at some later date with your permission and so on. So we'll sign this form. It'll be sent on to you. And what they'll do here on this end is to create a little outline that outlines just the major topics that have been discussed in the interview, and they'll send that to you too, give you the opportunity to correct any maybe misidentifications or misspellings or whatever that may be in that outline. And I'm sure, by the way, that if you think of something, you know, that we've overlooked, you'll certainly have the opportunity to add that to the archive as well.
Oh, I appreciate it. And the one thing that I should mention, too, is the dean team.
Oh, yeah.
We worked internally certainly with our group in the grad school, but all of that, depending on what happened in the schools and colleges, that was critically important. So being connected with them, listening to them, appreciating their challenges became a big part of what I felt was important to be sure that we were doing things that were making them successful. And sometimes we succeed and sometimes not, just as any case. But we also sometimes, I don't know if you remember, Chuck, but we were having meetings separate from some of the ones with the chancellor so that we could get our act together as to what we thought might help or work for the campus, because it was also a great team of folks.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was some discussion about how we could be more effective as a group of deans, and exactly what our campus-wide leadership consisted of. I mean, how were we as deans coming together to contribute to campus-wide leadership?
Right, and there are two roles that every dean has, which I respect. They have to be, you know, have the expertise in their field and be an advocate for their area, but they also have to be university citizens, and that's what you need from deans in order to move forward. And I was really excited when I would see those pop up.
Yeah, that was a, those were really good discussions.
Yeah, I had a great time, and I'm proud of what we did and how it's going, and learned from the aspects that didn't work as well. So that's how you get better.
That's good. All right. Well, thank you again.
It's great to hear from y'all. I enjoy working with both of y'all, so this is a pleasure from my perspective.
This has been fun.
It's been fun for us, too. We've really enjoyed talking to you, and we certainly wish you well in the in this phase of your career. We imagine things are going well for you out there.
Well, it's never boring.
That's right.
We had our first case of swine flu in the dorm, so I've been busy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll see you again next winter.
Okay, look forward to it. Y'all take care now.
All right. Okay, thanks again.
Bye.
Bye-bye.